fight or flight. This never-ending quest for the next adrenaline rush has consequences, and they lead us to ask, can we manage our addiction to adrenaline?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 793rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Topeka who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Rick O'Shea on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, I stopped by a little gas station the other day for a cup of coffee. A young man ahead of me purchased two large energy drinks. When my turn at the register came, I asked the cash register how many of those cans of energy drinks she sold every day. At least 100 every morning, she said, not counting coffee, of course. We are always, it seems, in a fight or in flight. When in these states of stress, our brain responds by dumping a hormone called adrenaline into our body. In the consequent adrenaline rush, blood flow is restricted to those areas of the brain that govern thinking and redirected to more primitive areas of the brain that govern reflexes. Sight becomes more acute, allowing us to see better, even in the dark. Hair stands on end, making us more sensitive to the surrounding environment. Heart rate increases by up to 500%, and arteries constrict to increase the pressure and speed at which blood is delivered to our muscles. Wow! These adrenaline rushes are great fun, which explains why we have become addicted to them and require two large energy drinks to get up every morning. But wait, our never-ending quest for more adrenaline does have consequences. Simply stated, as it is in the book Adrenaline Nation, chronic stress increases the rate at which we age and decreases the age at which we die. This sad fact leads us to ask, can we manage our addiction to adrenaline? Here to help us find an answer, we have Peter McCarthy, who is a naturopath, author of Adrenaline Nation. Peter, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Hello, are you there?
We got you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure whether you heard me. Absolutely. Glad to be here this morning.
Okay, glad to have you. So you're in Austin, right?
I am in Austin, Texas. That's correct.
Now, I think we met in Toronto, or was it Austin?
We actually met in Bastrop not long
ago. Okay, it was in Bastrop. Okay.
Yes, at the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance convention.
That's where it was. Okay, fair enough. You know, the thing that fascinates me about Peter McCarthy was that this is a naturopath. It's his third career. His first career was an Air Force officer. His second career was an airline pilot. And his third career is a naturopathic physician. How did you make that transition from airline pilot to naturopathic physician, Peter?
Well, I want to just correct the title just a wee bit, Michael. I'm a traditional naturopath, but not a physician. I'm not trained to diagnose, prescribe, treat, or cure disease. But to answer your first question directly, I had developed a lifelong interest in natural health and the ability of natural health remedies and treatments to enhance my own health. And as I saw the effect of stress on my family, on my fellow Air Force crew members in the B-52 world and in assignments like the Pentagon, as well as the effects of stress on my fellow airline crew members and the passengers that we flew, really became clear to me that this is a consuming interest, and it directed my focus into the profession of naturopathy and ultimately into that of stress management, which resulted in my writing Adrenaline Nation.
Well, Peter, since you're an author and a pilot, why don't you take us on a flight of fiction back about 12,000 years to help illustrate what we're going to be talking about today, this whole notion of stress, of adrenaline, and the consequences thereof.
sure, absolutely. And I include an expanded version of the story in Adrenaline Nation to really drive home the point that our stress response is a very primitive response. It goes back to the very origins of the human species. About 12,000 years ago, many of our ancestors lived in caves and relied on what the land around them provided. And in many cases, they were either hunters or gatherers or both. And many of the women in the tribes of that time really did get involved in learning about the beneficial effects of the plants and flowers around them that had what turned out to be medicinal properties. So they went out on regular excursions in the forest around them to find those plants and herbs. But, of course, they were subject to the same threats that the hunters were. And in the particular case that you're talking about, we had a woman by the name of Anatha who encountered a saber-toothed cat. And she had to make an instantaneous decision as to whether to fight or flee. She chose to flee. The cat pursues her up a tree and backs her up against a branch where she is almost devoured by this cat, but fortunately the cat falls to the forest floor and that incident saves her. But in the process of that, she experiences all of the manifestations of the fight, flight, or response that we humans in 21st century America experience on a daily basis. The difference, of course, is that in contrast to our ancestor Anatha, we can't really differentiate between those incidents that actually threaten our lives and those that just cause us what ultimately becomes chronic stress.
So when Anatha runs into the saber-toothed cat in the forest, the first thing that happens is that her mind goes, oh my God, I'm going to get eaten. So it dumps adrenaline into Anatha's body, thus giving her the strength and the reflexes to run like hell, climb a tree, and save her life.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's just one of over 1,400 separate physiological changes that occur virtually instantaneously when our bodies go into a stress response. In her case now, the blood flow patterns of the brain shift from the higher functions of judgment, creativity, and decision-making to the reflexive actions of, I have to run really fast in order to get away from this threat. And at the same time, the heart rate commensurately increases, as does the blood pressure, to get more blood flow to those large muscle groups to be able to fuel that flight away from the threat. And as I indicated, those are just a few of the many, many reactions.
1,400 were different reactions.
That's
so
right.
So adrenaline is kind of like God's gift to prey, right?
That's exactly right. But it's also God's gift to predators, because make no mistake, when that saber-toothed cat elected to attack Anatha and identified her as prey, it experienced some of the same kinds of adrenaline-fueled reflexes and rushes that Anatha was experiencing.
So there we are, 12,000 years ago, and this adrenaline rush essentially carried us through 12,000 years to here we are today. No saber-toothed tigers.
Well, no saber-toothed tigers, but I think what has happened over time is the saber-toothed tiger has morphed into things like our in-basket, driving in rush hour, traffic, perhaps contentious relationships at the workplace or at home. The list goes on and on. And the challenge that we confront on a daily basis is that our minds really don't differentiate between whether or not those so-called threats actually do threaten our existence, or rather whether those are threats that we create in our own minds and therefore that precipitate a stress response.
Now, how do we become so addicted to this stress business?
You know, I think it's been really a function of what the famous holistic doctor Deepak Chopra calls the hypnosis of social conditioning. We have been conditioned by the everyday existence in our society and the influences that that society impinges upon us to think that a lot of this is normal. And as you indicated at the top of the show, that it's pleasurable. You know, we get a rush from, for example, sitting in the movie and seeing some intense action sequence where the protagonist is being threatened, the outcome is in doubt, and oh my gosh, they just barely escape.
It's so fun, right? Adrenaline rushes are fun.
Yes, they are.
The problem, of course, is that they do have consequences, and we're going to talk about them when we get back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Peter McCarthy on Adrenaline Nation. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, just think about how many times every day each one of us goes to that magic button that says stress and punches it. And by punching it, we all get this nice little hit of adrenaline that makes us feel strong and virile and happy and wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. Gosh, if I were to count them myself, I would be embarrassed. But how about you? Every time we do that, though, it has a consequence on our body. And that consequence means that we're going to be less healthy and we're going to live less long. I guess that's about the extent of it, right, Peter?
That's absolutely right. And at the top of the show in your intro, Michael, you framed it very well in quoting from Adrenaline Nation. Chronic stress increases the rate at which we age and decreases the age at which we die. And the pioneer stress researcher, Dr. Hans Selye, really framed that very well from the outset of stress research that began back in the 1930s.
And there we are. So we live on this stuff almost. I kind of think we're all addicted to it to one extent or another. But in the introduction to Adrenaline Nation, you talk about there being two kinds of stress, a good one and a bad one, eustress and distress, right?
Yeah, eustress is the good kind. It's the kind of stress that we experience, say, when at the end of a good workout, when all of our endorphins are pumping and we just feel energized and alive and all of the blood flow to all of our organs and extremities is just optimal. Or when we win the lottery or we're getting married, you know, that's the kind of stress that has a positive effect on our bodies. And the common denominator with all of those is it short-lived. It's something we experience briefly, and then our body normalizes itself. But the detrimental kind of stress, which Dr. Selye calls distress, is what most people think about when they hear the word stress.
And the kind of stress, I was thinking about this, it's almost like the good stress is hard to come by. It's well-earned stuff. But the distress is kind of easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is easy because it's ubiquitous in our society. And you talked about earlier about how it accumulates and how so much of it is associated with events that, again, we consider to be normal. To use just one example, If someone drives to and from work in rush hour traffic in a major metropolitan area, assuming a 40-year working lifetime, they can experience as many as 20,000 rush hour events during their working life.
Which means 20,000 shots of adrenaline, right?
That's exactly right. Absolutely. And it can be in the form of traffic jams. It can be in the form of stopping short behind somebody who brakes hard in front of you. The list goes on, you know, driving in rainy weather, those kinds of things, all accumulate if we don't take positive action to alleviate them. And our society, unfortunately, we've been socially conditioned to not take that action.
Well, you talk about the various kinds of stress that we stack up on ourselves. You call them stress stacks, actually. So I thought that would be a great place for us to get a hold of this whole thing and go through these stress stacks and talk about how they impact us and what we could probably do to get a hold of them. Let's start with the first one, which is, of course, foods and beverages. This being the food chain, I was happy to see that at the top of the list.
I imagine you were. And, you know, I like to call the list of those what I label dietary influences, the foods and beverages that cause stress, as all the usual suspects. And they're so integral to most people's daily diets, again, they don't realize that they are creating stress within themselves by consuming them. And they are, just briefly, caffeinated foods and beverages, processed sugar foods, white flour foods, foods that contain artificial sweeteners or contain trans fats. And all of them, each in their own way, have an impact on the body that creates a stress response.
Do you know, if you were to take all of those out of convenience stores, there would be nothing left on the shelf but a can of oil.
You're absolutely right. You know, and I have a convenience store right down the street from where I live. And as I think or look visually through all of that and recall what's there, you're absolutely correct, because almost all of the food products that they offer have one or more of those ingredients contained in them.
Well, it seems like instead of going away from that world, we're becoming even more addicted to it through these things that are called energy drinks, which have become, like you say, ubiquitous lately. Whenever you go into a convenience store, that's what they feature prominently everywhere throughout the store, is some kind of energy drink. What the heck are those?
Well, you're absolutely right, and I would, in answering your question, I would add to your story about watching people buy energy drinks. I was in that particular store that I mentioned to use the ATM, and I watched a laborer, a gentleman who obviously makes a living with his hands, walk up to the cash register and buy two pint-sized energy drinks. And when you look at the composition of these energy drinks, although they have a long list of so-called enhancement factors of vitamins and proteins and things of that nature, but the overwhelming proportion of the energy drink ingredients are really a large dose of caffeine, as well as a large dose of sugar, and it's usually in the form of high fructose corn syrup.
Or they have zero calorie sweeteners too, which are even more frightening in my book.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, one of my good friends here in Texas is a woman by the name of Janet Starr Hall, and she herself has written several books on the subject of artificial sweeteners and has her own compelling story to tell about that. But the bottom line is, you're absolutely correct. The combination of caffeine and artificial sweeteners is a real witch's brew in terms of what it does to your body.
So, you know, you talk about seeing, and this is exactly what I saw. I saw a young laborer go into the store in front of me and buy two of these pint-sized cans of caffeine, and that I'm sure was his breakfast and maybe even his lunch. And so what happens to the body when that's the nutrition?
Well, of course, the first thing that they're looking for is what you talked about at the top of the show, the adrenaline rush, the so-called energy. But people don't realize that that energy bank of the body that fuels the stress response is a finite resource. It's a lot like how we manage our checking accounts, our credit cards. Everything has a finite upper limit, and if you breach that limit, bad things are going to happen to you. Well, same thing occurs in the stress response. And when you put the combination of caffeine and artificial sweeteners in the body, it creates, first of all, it signals the body that something intensely sweet has been put in the body. So, for example, aspartame is 180 times sweeter than normal sugar. What that does is it triggers in the body, I am going to be consuming an enormous amount of calories. And so it starts to reprogram all of the functions in the body having to do with digestion and absorption of nutrients into storage as opposed to digesting those foods for energy production. And so it really is the perhaps unspoken reason why so many of the people who chronically consume diet drinks are themselves overweight. They trigger the body to store those nutrients in the fat cells as opposed to actually using them for energy production. And it's really a trap of our own making when we continue to do that. And there are other even more adverse consequences having to do with aspartame as well that I'll be happy to share with you and your audience.
It's a complete disaster area, but we love it, and we get two cans every morning just to wake up. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're talking with Peter M. McCarthy, author of Adrenaline Nation. We're talking about our addiction to adrenaline and the impact that addiction has on our bodies, how it shortens our lives, makes us less healthy. What are we going to do? How are we going to come to grips with it? We're talking about right now about all of the stress factors that we pile up in our life, and we're going to go to the second one, which is a little bit different than food, but it's there as well. We're going to talk about lifestyle influences right back. Do stay tuned. You know, we're always, it seems, in a fight or in flight. This never-ending quest we have for the next adrenaline rush has consequences, though, and they lead us to ask, can we manage our addiction to adrenaline? Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Peter McCarthy, author of Adrenaline Nation. We're talking about how to come to grips with all of this adrenaline we pump into our bodies every day almost. We have all kinds of stress, and we go to those stresses, and we punch the button, and we get a hit of adrenaline. We feel good for a minute or two, and then it goes out of our body, and then we go, oh, I need another shot. And we go get another one with all of these stresses that we pile onto ourselves. First stress factor we were talking about are the foods we eat and the bad foods and their impact upon our bodies. You go to a convenience store, and if you look at what you find there, you'll find caffeine, artificial sweeteners, processed sugar, white flour. You take all of those things out of the convenience store, and there's no convenience store left. But that is one of our big stress factors, the foods we eat. The next one we're going to talk about with Peter is lifestyle influences. And we have a bunch of those that add stress to our lives, do we not, Peter?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think probably the one that is most commonplace in American society is sleep deprivation. We've conditioned ourselves to believe that the old adage, which really is founded not only in wisdom but also in good science, that 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night is necessary for continued good health. But we convinced ourselves that, gee, you know, as long as we can walk down to the local coffee shop and get a large latte and a sticky bun, that we can make up for that sleep deprivation. And so we've really moved more towards getting less and less sleep and relying more and more on products like those energy drinks we were talking about before.
And thus, that's one huge lifestyle influence that has a way of tripping us up and requiring more adrenaline to cope with it. Other things, what about just pop culture in general? I mean, turn on the television, and what do we see? Violence.
You're absolutely you're absolutely right, whether it's the reporting of the news where we see graphic images from the latest combat zone in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Or Chicago or Detroit.
There you go. Or, you know, the latest mass shooting that takes place most recently, unfortunately, in Colorado. When you look at all of those things, from one event on the, in the media to another, the common denominator is that adrenaline rush. You know, our, what's the most popular category of TV programming now? Reality TV. And there's always an element of uncertainty and therefore keep you on the edge of your seat element to see who's going to be the one that wins or whether the protagonist is going to escape the threat. And the list goes on and on throughout our society and the popular media.
And, of course, sports are absolutely right there. I was just thinking of a baseball game I went to see the other day, and, oh, my goodness, adrenaline from nine innings worth, you know. And there's certainly a lot there. You know, the third stress stack that you talk about really caught my attention. You call it cognitive filters. And I thought, now, what the heck do you mean by cognitive filters?
Well, cognitive filters are really the prism through which we view the world. It's the combination of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual factors that impact on our perception of our daily life. And that perception, in large part, determines our reaction to stress. And as I mentioned in Adrenaline Nation, I derived this model from the research of a well-known holistic osteopathic physician by the name of Michael Chaito, who created the life grid to describe someone suffering from an autoimmune disease's response to stress. And I was able to expand on that a little bit, and it really does kind of create our outlook on life, if you will. And it's comprised of a variety of factors. It can be everything from your perception that you've got an arthritic hip, for example, and you can't do things that other people might be able to do. It's also derived from your own spiritual practice, whatever that may be, walking in nature, meditation, going to church, again, a long list of things.
Yeah,
so all of them.
I guess that's what really struck me and when you talked about cognitive filters and how, as modern people, we seem to be moving further and further away from religion and don't really seem to have anything to replace that, and thus there isn't that filter there anymore.
Well, you know, I expanded on the discussion of spirituality, and religion is just one aspect of spirituality,
right.
As you know. I really define it as your sense of connectedness to the larger world. And when you connect that idea to the concept of stress and the fact that a stress response actually diminishes your capacity, your mental capacity to be able to connect to that larger world, is it any wonder that we have such an epidemic of loneliness, of a feeling of separateness in the society? And I think that part of the recovery from chronic stress has to involve feeling a sense of connectedness with what's going on around you, and therefore a feeling of safety that everything is going to be okay, as opposed to constantly living on the edge, no matter how physically pleasurable that may be, at least at the outset.
But it's easy to fix that loneliness, because all you have to do is get two cans of energy drinks, and you're there.
Yeah, there you go, my buddy, the energy drink. You know, and you know, people really do, I think, understand when we talk about loneliness and stress. People that I talk to, my clients, my colleagues in the natural health professions, they get it. You know, it's that experience of standing at the plate of at a baseball game, and you know, you're the hitter that has to hit the winning hit to win the ball game, or standing before a judgmental client before a business presentation and knowing that you've really got to hit it out of the park in order for you to land that big account. And you know, there are many other examples of that kind of experience, but you wind up, because you're stressed, feeling very much alone,
and thus not very not very good at hitting the ball when you need to, then, when you feel that way, because you just don't feel like you can hit it. The fourth stress stack that you talk about is a nutritional gap, which is to say what we need to eat isn't there to eat, right?
Well, that's right. It's literally the difference between what we actually eat or have available to eat and what our bodies need to healthily support a stress response. And the research that I did showed that virtually nobody in this country gets the nutrients they need on a daily basis to be able to support that stress response in a healthful manner. And, you know, of course, this is, I know, near and dear to your heart, because we're on Food Chain Radio. You want to be able to put as much healthy food into you as you can. But as you pointed out earlier in the show, when you're relying on fast food or convenience stores to comprise your daily diet, it's not going to be there.
When we come back from this break, I'd like to kind of expand on that with a little story that I experienced while doing a radio show from the Indian reservation in South Dakota and my experience in their convenience store. Right back. This is the Food Chain. Well, how do we come to grips with all of this stress that we live on? You know, some years ago I did a Food Chain radio show from the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota, Lakota Sioux, Wounded Knee. And the show was going to be about the Sioux buffalo herd and of modern times, where they're going to go with this herd and whatnot. And I was waiting for my contact at a convenience store on the reservation there. And like we've been talking about, pretty much the only thing that you could find to eat there was caffeine, artificial sweeteners, processed sugar, white flour. And I was truly amazed, because the only jerky that the convenience store had was some kind of jerky made in Los Angeles. And I got to thinking, what happened to the Great Sioux tribe and their buffalo? And why aren't they making buffalo jerky and selling it to Los Angeles? Nothing made sense there. But what really didn't make sense is that I couldn't see what those people were eating, and the impact of those foods on what is in a tremendously stress-filled life that those who live on those reservations must live. And so, Peter McCarthy, how do we get out of this?
Well, you know, I think the first thing we need to do, and this was a big part of my writing Adrenaline Nation, was to become more aware of all of the factors that impact on our lives that cause stress. It's why I developed the stress stack itself, but also to be able to take action to alleviate that stress. And, you know, well know, Michael, having read my book, one of the big impediments to making that happen is the resistance we have to change in our society. And I devote a whole chapter in Adrenaline Nation to the process of change. So we need to develop a way that we can easily implement change. But we also need to be...
Well, wait a minute. Who is resisting changing all of this stuff that we're stressing ourselves out with? Who could possibly not want us to change?
Well, you know, it really starts by looking in the mirror, because there's a lot of wisdom in a famous adage that says change is hard because we overestimate what we have and we underestimate what we stand to gain. And we've been socially conditioned to believe that everything that we experience on a daily basis in terms of the foods we eat, how we transport ourselves, the list goes on, is really just a part of daily life that we've come to accept. But when you look at, for example, the food system that we have, the creation and delivery of food products to the marketplace. And, of course, that's the primary focus of your program. When you're talking about processed food, yes, it's easy, it's quick, you can pop it in the microwave, but what is it really giving you in the way of nutrition? Our healthcare system is really not designed to address stress, which is a contributory factor to illness. It's rather designed to chase that healthcare horse after it's left the barn, once you're already sick. So those are several of many examples within our society that really impede our ability to change our behavior effectively.
Are you saying money is an obstacle to change? Would that be
absolutely. That's absolutely correct. I think you've hit the nail on the head, Michael. When you look at all of those activities that I just talked about, every one of them has some kind of profit associated with them. And so, therefore, the organizations and companies and individuals, some of whom are quite influential in society, have a vested interest in maintaining that status quo. And that monetary influence on what kind of food products we have available, what kind of health care is available to us, and even what kind of information is available to us about the subject of chronic stress is unfortunately adversely impacted by monetary influences.
So if the big boys are all against us, what does that leave us?
Well, you know, I think what it leaves us is people like you and me who have decided that we need to bring a message to our fellow citizens that is factually based, that is devoid of monetary influence in terms of the information that is being presented to our fellow citizens, so that there can be an independent provision of information that people will find credible and reliable and that they can take substantive action with. And, you know, I tell people stress is a holistic phenomenon. It's not something that you can do just one or two things and effectively alleviate your stress load. You've got to look at the big picture in order to be able to do that.
And you have to look at all of those stress stacks that you talk about, and here's a stress, there's a stress, and they're all piled up like a pile of firewood in the backyard. And you have to look through them all and make that evaluation. And yet it's so hard because the world is against us. When we do go to that convenience store of life, there really isn't much there to gain nutritionally wise. And so we're stuck with those kinds of things that aren't going to help us at all. So we really have to step outside ourselves. So we're going to have a few minutes left, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you what we can do as individuals. Can we look toward focusing on the eustress, as you call it, instead of our distress? Is that going to be a possibility? Can we look toward a different kind of paradigm than the one that dominates our social lives, a different way of looking at medicine? We're going to ask those questions of Peter McCarthy, who is the author of Adrenaline Nation, and we will be right back after these brief moments of intelligent conversation with our commercial sponsors. And you, do stay tuned. Michael Olson, Peter McCarthy. Well, folks, simply stated, as it is in the book Adrenaline Nation, chronic stress increases the rate at which we age and decreases the age at which we die. This sad fact leads us to ask, can we manage our addiction to adrenaline? The world is against us, Peter, but what can we do as individuals to stand up to that world and get control of our lives so that we don't die early and get sick too soon?
Well, Michael, as I outlined in Adrenaline Nation, I offered people the tool of the stress stack to allow them to do an honest self-assessment of all of the factors that are impacting their lives adversely with respect to chronic stress.
So they can look at these stress stacks, categorize the different stresses, and look at each one and say, where am I here, right?
That's exactly right, and that was the whole purpose of the stress stack model, to allow people to do that. But I took it a step further and actually offered a wide range of information and resources, suggestions for stress alleviation that have proven themselves over time to address each of the different blocks of your personal stress stack. Again, it's important to emphasize stress is a holistic phenomenon. It doesn't lend itself to magic bullet solutions. So if you're serious about alleviating your stress, you need to take a comprehensive approach. And Adrenaline Nation gives you the tools to do that.
You mean to tell me that giant cans of energy drinks won't do it?
giant cans of energy drinks are almost literally like beating a dead horse. And the dead horse, unfortunately, in this case, is your adrenal glands. It will actually drive you further into the exhaustion phase. I have a very good friend here, just to share a personal story briefly, here in Texas, who just recently came out of what they called an Addisonian crisis. And Addison's disease is the actual cessation of adrenal gland function. If that happens within 2 weeks, if you're not then put on a lifetime of corticosteroid drugs, you'll die. She came perilously close to that, and it scared the daylights out of her, rightly so. Fortunately enough that she's now on a different path of health, but how many other people that maybe are listening to this program or that your audience knows of are right there with my friend?
I suspect quite a few of us when it gets right down to us, which is really the frightening thing. I wonder if we can't, you know, look at our stress stacks and kind of turn away from them, turn away from the distress of our lives to the eustress, to those positive forms of stress that bring us joy, but cost a little bit more. Because they do cost a little bit more. You know, when you exercise, it costs you a little bit more than sitting in a chair drinking an energy drink. You have to work. But you get this wonderful sense of empowerment. What do you think? Can we turn away from the distress and go to the eustress, Peter?
I think we can. It's a matter of personal choice, and you used a word just now that is crucial to being able to solve the problem of chronic stress, and that's empowerment. Self-empowerment as individuals, taking charge of our own lives instead of blindly accepting what the gatekeepers of the status quo would have us believe. That's really key to be able to alleviating chronic stress individually and societally.
Well, I think I'm going to go relieve some chronic stress today. I'm going to go out to the farmer's market and eat my way around and smile a lot. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Peter McCarthy, the author of Adrenaline Nation. Not a bad piece of writing. Thank you very much for bringing it to the world, Peter McCarthy. And thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.